Hey, everybody, welcome to the Daily Objective. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that many of us have shied away from and been afraid to approach. I personally am not a finance guy. I don't pretend to be. But lately, I've been learning a little bit about the whole crypto thing, which has been controversial, I think, for a while now. And you end up hearing a lot of conflicting opinions, especially from people that really take money seriously, free market, capitalist people. You, even with them, you hear conflicting opinions. You know, people give me advice. They say now's the time to buy real estate in Austin, Texas. I said, all right. And I did that. Then they said, now's the time to get into NFTs. So I announced the Ruckus Nuckus NFT collection on January 1st drops. Not entirely sure what that even means, but it's happening. So here to help me understand, we've got, first off, a more of a traditional finance hedge fund manager type of guy. This is our co-host. You know him well. It's Jonathan Honig. And we've got
a
special guest today. This is a guy who I understand to be some kind of crypto powerhouse or crypto expert. Well, we'll find that out. And he can tell me what it is I've been getting into. I love the feeling of it. This digital universe I've stepped into. It's like slamming a Red Bull, like cheap thrills, fast cars, rich girls, fine wine. I've lost my sense. I've lost control. I've lost my mind. Please welcome David Vexler.
Rucka, thanks for the introduction. Pleasure to be here.
Cool. So I guess let's start at the beginning. What the hell is crypto?
Crypto. I think you have to go back and think about what problem crypto or Bitcoin is solving. So the anonymous founder of Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, he was quite explicit about why, what problem he wanted to solve. And the problem is that you cannot trust central banks with money. They have a bad track record when it comes to the worthiness of the money supply. And there's a lot of bad things that happen because we have a system of fiat money where banks basically are able to create infinite money. And so the problems that Satoshi was solving, and he was explicit in why he created Bitcoin, was to create a money that is not controlled by governments, to separate money and governments. And I don't know how much we want to go into why it is bad that governments control money, but basically, when governments control money, they can inflate it to infinity, and they can redirect arbitrary portions of the economy into whatever cause politicians want to support. So whereas with taxes, if you want to have a government program, you have to collect taxes from people and direct it on whatever cause the politicians support. With money printing, they can arbitrarily create infinite money, spend it, and redirect the economy. And that's why we had two world wars, because they were able to have this new concept of total war. You could not do that in the 19th century when on the gold standard, because you had to collect gold from people. But with fiat money, you can have total war. But also we have constant business cycles, because politicians are motivated to have numbers go up, or to direct money to their cronies that support them. And that creates a constant manipulation of capital markets. And so that's the problem that Satoshi was trying to solve when he created Bitcoin. He was quite explicit that was the reason. And so he decided that what we need is a money that's like gold, but that governments can't confiscate. So he wanted to make a digital gold. And so if you remember one thing from today, it's that there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. Having a hard cap on Bitcoin is the key to having a hard money. So that's why Bitcoin was created, and that's what's responsible for its growth. People's belief that this is a powerful new alternative that solves the problem of government-controlled money.
So the finite supply is what makes it, what allows it to be valuable. So the government or anyone can't just say, I'm printing a trillion, billion, million, trillion dollars. Here you go. Because then.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, so in your opinion, the sort of digital equivalent of gold, it's legitimate. It really is finite. Nobody could add to it or anything like that. Do you see Bitcoin as sustainable and as legitimate as, let's say, the gold standard, or is it the best we can do in the state of things that we've find ourselves in with the government involvement in finance?
Ultimately, the price of Bitcoin is the manifestation of people's belief about the legitimacy of Bitcoin. So right now, for example, the market cap of gold is something like $11 trillion. Bitcoin is $1 trillion. And so it's been growing at about 170% per year in terms of the price for the last 10 years, quite consistently. And so that's the representation of people's belief that it is a worthy store of value. And the more track record Bitcoin has, the more it's growing and the more people are coming to agree with that perspective. So I think the fundamentals of Bitcoin are good. It has all the properties that we need to become a global reserve currency and replace gold.
I'll jump in. And first of all, thank you, David, so much for being with us. And, you know, we didn't mention that, you know, we know David, and I know I'm sure a lot of our super chatters and viewers know David is a student of objectivism, is a part of, I think you'd say, our philosophy posse here. And many he's a familiar to many of us on Facebook and other social media. So thank you for being with here. And, you know, David isn't just a fan of Bitcoin, if you will. He's a consultant on it. David actually runs a private partnership called the Bitcoin Consultancy. He is involved with consulting with companies on everything from cryptocurrency related disaster recovery services, aka probably everything from I can't remember my password onto, you know, it's on a hard drive in a dump somewhere, to workshops, all these types of projects. So David is really well versed in this. And thank you, by the way, for all the super chats. We'll get to all of them. Brian wishing us a Merry Christmas. Roland offering us some fiat money. He says, hopes it doesn't cause a war. And Mary Aline asks, so taxes, it's harder to hide what government is doing. Well, we'll get to that as well. But, you know, David, I wanted to, David, I wanted to start asking you, you're talking a lot about Bitcoin. You're not talking at all about blockchain. And what I hear from most people involved in this space is, oh, well, you know, Bitcoin goes up and down. The real value here is the blockchain technology. But you're really an advocate, from what I'm hearing, is, you know, Bitcoin as money, as this is the new, as you said, replacement for gold and the gold standard, and this is going to change the way we look at money writ large.
Yeah, I intentionally shift the focus away from crypto, so-called crypto, and from the blockchain to the word Bitcoin, because I think that is where the value is. The blockchain is a revolutionary technology, and it has all kinds of applications beside money. So that's quite important. But I think specifically Bitcoin, that project, is going to capture the vast majority of the value in the space. There's now 20,000 different crypto assets. Some of them are currencies. There's all kinds of different crypto things you can buy, NFTs, et cetera. But I think the revolutionary idea here is specifically Bitcoin, the idea of a hard-capped new money. That's the new digital gold. And that's what I think we should focus on. I think a lot of these other projects are vaporware. They have unsound business models. They're going to go away. Bitcoin is here to stay.
I want to jump in really quickly because, you know, Ayn Rand Center UK and Miss Rand and her proteges wrote a lot on this topic. David, I know you've probably reviewed a lot of this. You know, one of the things that Greenspan at least talks about in that seminal essay is that, you know, what they choose as a medium of exchange. Obviously, Rand talks about gold. He says it's not arbitrary. Where store of value considerations are as important as they are in richer and more civilized societies. The medium exchanges must be a durable commodity, usually a metal. Bitcoin obviously isn't that, but here's my specific question. They say that a commodity chosen as a medium must be a luxury. Human desires for luxuries are unlimited, and therefore luxury goods are always in demand. How is Bitcoin a luxury?
Well, so this is a theory about how money comes to be valuable. And we can debate the theory, but if something is a money, you can't use a theory about how things come to be money to deny the fact that it's money. If people use something as money, it is a money, period, right? Money is whatever people use to store a value in medium exchange. So if Bitcoin is not Bitcoin has no fundamental value. It has no utility value besides money. So if Bitcoin comes to be money, then the theory is wrong. You can't use a theory to say that something that is being used as money is not money. Does that make sense?
Sure. So are you saying you might disagree with at least Dr. Greenspan and Ms. Rand's theory of money in this case, that, you know, a money has to be a metal, you know, as she, they say, as a durable commodity, usually a metal, and that it has to be a luxury, in that human desires for luxuries are unlimited. And so, you know, even in the prehistoric civilization, this is my, you know, gold is pretty, humans always want it. Can you say that you can't say the same thing necessarily about a Bitcoin?
Well, we can certainly observe historically, it's been the case that all monies first had some utility value, and that's what enabled them to become money. I wouldn't say that they had to be a luxury, but the fact that all money has to be durable, like it can't rust or rot, and it has to have certain properties, lends itself to being luxuries. But diamonds are not good money because they're too rare. They're not divisible. If you divide a diamond too much, it becomes worthless. It's just dust. So I would say that money certainly has certain requirements, and precious metals fill that role for literally all of human history. And it was not until the last 100 years that suddenly we saw a problem with precious metals. And the problem is that, one, governments have been confiscating them. And two is, now we have this global economy, and precious metals are just not a good money for this world. So certainly these theories are valid historically for how things came to be money, but the world has changed. Now we have these near omnipotent governments, and also importantly, we have this global economy that works at the speed of light, like literally in the internet, communicates information at the speed of light. And Bitcoin is just native money for this new reality.
Let me ask you this. And remember, I'm new to this. What is it that separates something like Bitcoin from all these other cryptocurrencies that have come about? Is it that Bitcoin came first? Because why can't these other cryptos be just as useful? And, you know, they're obviously putting food on the table for a lot of people for now.
So here's how Bitcoin is different. Yes, it was the first. Second, most importantly, Bitcoin has the commitment of a 21 million Bitcoin cap that will ever exist. Pretty much every other currency does not have this commitment. So if you look at the number two crypto asset, Ethereum, it has very arbitrary supply. So pretty much every couple of months, a change is made to the Ethereum protocol where more Ethereum is being created or destroyed. We have no idea how much Ethereum will ever exist. Literally no idea, because the team behind it is just changing their mind. But Bitcoin is created from day one with this commitment. And it is a line of code, but more importantly, it's the idea that the community has. And every year that passes, that idea goes stronger, that this is how much Bitcoin will ever exist. Now, that's the thing that distinguishes it. And then the third thing is the network effects. So not only is it the first, but every year that passes, more and more people are using it. And so there's more lock-in into Bitcoin as a store of value.
Okay. Go, Jonathan.
I'll take a follow-up a little bit. I'm by no means a skeptic. I think it's very ambitious. It's very ambitious, but I also think it's fascinating because this idea of money and currency is something that, you know, Ms. Rand wrote a lot about. One of the things she talked about, and quoting now, this is from the essay, The Money-Making Personality, is that money is a tool of exchange. It represents wealth only so long as it can be traded for material goods and services. And, you know, this is obviously my perspective or my analysis here. Like, at this point, it doesn't seem as if a lot of people are accepting and holding at least Bitcoin as a true store of value. They might, you know, say, oh, I'll take it. And then they quickly switch it back into dollars. But, is this something really that you can trade for a good or a service? Is that a future for Bitcoin? Or is it just more of a speculation?
So different assets have degrees of moneyness. So I remember I once flew to Malaysia. And I remember being told, I traded my dollars for, I forget the Malaysian ringgit, or I forget what it was, but you must convert it back before you leave the country, because Malaysian currency is worthless anywhere else. So the point is, some fiat monies have a low degree of moneyness. That's an actual term for economics, moneyness, which is the acceptability that that currency has. So dollars have the most moneyness of any other asset in existence right now. They're accepted everywhere in the US and pretty much every other country. In fact, people all over the world, if they could hold one currency, it's not their local currency, it's dollars.
Is that, is moneyness synonymous with liquidity? What we'd think of as being a liquidity, easily to buy and sell, transferable?
Liquidity is the prime determinant of moneyness. But moneyness, I would say, is the desirability of something to be used as a money. And liquidity is the main factor in that. But even in China, where you can't spend dollars directly, Chinese will still want to hold dollars because they're more stable. And, you know, if the government takes their RMB, they can still hold their dollars. And they can use it overseas if they ever leave the country. But anyway, so dollars right now are the most widely accepted currency. No debate there. And but gold is a lot less money than dollars, but it's still an important store of value because it's a commodity. It can be inflated by the government. So something can be valuable and have good fundamentals, even if it's not very money-like right now. So Bitcoin has the best fundamentals of money. It's the most fungible, portable, divisible, durable currency, and scarce. Most importantly, it's the most scarce currency. So it has the properties of becoming a good money. Right now, it's not widely accepted, but everybody that holds Bitcoin has a belief that at some point it will be as money or even more money than the dollar.
So I think you said earlier, Alex, that if people are using something as money, then no theory can, like, you know, explain that, argue that away. I mean, they're using it as money. And I think James Valiant in the chat room, I think, is responding to that. He's saying, so any fiat currency is likewise legitimate, quote, money. So would your answer be, Alex, that if it's being done voluntarily with people, that they're agreeing to use something as money, that's one thing. But when the government starts to say what is money and they start printing it, then that's quite another. Would that be how you would answer that? Or should I just let you answer? Go ahead.
So money is money. Something is being used money, it's money, period. The question is that a good or a bad money? So all fiat currencies are bad money because they have this loophole that they can be inflated to oblivion, and eventually all fiat currencies are inflated to oblivion. So there's two aspects to money. The moneyness, meaning the acceptance of that money, and dollars are the most money of all money. Then the fundamental quality of that asset as money, and fiat monies are very bad money because they are being destroyed. Gold today are no longer good money because it's not global and it's subject to confiscation. Bitcoin are not very money. Again, this is a term from economics, moneyness, but it has the best fundamentals. And that is what powers my belief in the long-term adoption of Bitcoin.
Let me first of all, I'm going to get your recommendation on Ruckus Nuckus NFT in just a moment. But I'm hearing strong buys across the street, at least on my end.
Oh,
but
yeah.
We want to thank all of the supporters of the Ayn Rand Center UK. Marilyn, there's a lot of questions for you, David. Marilyn says, so with taxes, it's harder to hide what government is doing than with fiat currency. Here's her question. What stops government from controlling Bitcoin?
Bitcoin is a global decentralized network. There's no Bitcoin CEO. There's no Bitcoin company. It is a peer-to-peer network that does not have any one entity controlling it. Any changes to Bitcoin are made by a supermajority consensus of the Bitcoin ecosystem. It's very hard to make changes to Bitcoin. And so governments have no power to confiscate or change the properties of Bitcoin. And if a government attempted to make a change, basically what they would have to do is dominate the hashing power of Bitcoin. So Bitcoin is controlled through mining, which is basically very powerful computers all over the world creating verifying new Bitcoin blocks. And governments would find it prohibitively expensive to try to sabotage or manipulate that, because just there's just not enough computing power for them to control Bitcoin.
But what about, here's Enric, thank you for your contribution. Enric says, I got notice of a crypto regulations going into effect August 17th, 2022. Do you know what they are in relation to the exchanges? So there is some, obviously, regulation here he's referring to.
Yeah, so governments can control Bitcoin. What they can control is the so-called on-ramps. So if you want to buy Bitcoin, you have to give somebody your dollars or pounds or euros in exchange for Bitcoin. Same for selling it. So that's what governments try to control, the on-ramp and the off-ramp. And certainly they have a lot of power there, like China has banned totally Bitcoin from their economy. So hopefully it will not come to a point where there's an open conflict of governments trying to ban Bitcoin. But the short answer is yes, governments try to control that. They have no power over Bitcoin per se, but they certainly want a cut of any profit you make in dealing with Bitcoin.
Well, I'll just say, apropos of this whole discussion of what is money, in my book, Price is Primary, still on sale. There's this, you know, we talk about how, you know, feathers were used by as money at one point, and shells were used as money, all these different, you know, forms of currency, and why ultimately metals. And I think Rand, I believe, echoes a bit about that. Timmy the Tiger asks, is Bitcoin being deflationary, not a liquidity elasticity issue long term? Could a hard fork that continues the halving indefinitely solve this? What do you think, Ruck?
Me? hold on. Let me lifeline. Hey, Alex, what do you think?
David.
Sorry. Yeah. Your name sounds like the last name has an X in it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not an economist. I have a degree in economics, but the question of is it bad that it's deflationary? Bitcoin is somewhat inflationary because more is being created every year. Some people think that's important, that the money supply grows with the economy. I think it doesn't. As long as the supply is predictable and stable, it doesn't really matter if it's inflationary or deflationary. What's important is that it's predictable and that's relatively stable. So Bitcoin, de facto, is deflationary because people are losing Bitcoin every year. So even though some is being mined, only 10% is remaining out of the 21 million, less than 10% is remaining. But a quarter has been permanently lost, and it will continue to be lost. That's how I make a living. I help people that lost their Bitcoin. But in any case, it doesn't really matter. What's important is that the money supply is predictable so that you can make contracts and set prices based on that.
All right. And Bonnie with a super chat asks, if Bitcoin is a product of new technology, could a future technology be developed that would replace Bitcoin, or doesn't it work that way?
So right now, there's literally over 20,000 different crypto assets. Some of them are cryptocurrencies. There's many different types of crypto assets, but many of them are trying to replace Bitcoin. And it is possible that one day somebody will make something dramatically better and it will replace Bitcoin. But Bitcoin is an idea. It's not a set of code. It's not software. It's really a commitment by a community to this cap of 21 million and everything else up for grabs. So Bitcoin is now 13 years old. It's gone through several major upgrades. We had one just a few months ago, the Taproot upgrade. So if somebody comes up with a better way to do digital money, the Bitcoin community is free to adopt it. The only way it would fail is that if the community became too toxic or was not able to coordinate itself to adopt upgrades. But certainly there have been major upgrades, and Bitcoin is free to copy anybody that comes up with a better idea.
What if it goes down?
If the network goes down?
No. What if the price goes down? You know, I mean, I guess that's the whole thing about the idea of a gold as a commodity or money as a luxury, is that, you know, when gold goes down, people who couldn't afford a ring for their spouses, you know, they can actually afford something that they would have wanted prior. But if Bitcoin goes down, who's going to want it? I guess that's my question. Who are the natural buyers of Bitcoin besides people who ultimately think it's going to go up in price?
So there's no utility value for Bitcoin besides money, meaning that, like, unlike gold, you can't wear it as jewelry. You can't use it in industry. It's only useful as money and a store of wealth. And ultimately, the only thing supporting the price of Bitcoin is only two things. One is speculation, that it's more valuable in the future. But two, and this is the important thing, is people actually using it as money. So there's current demand for people, let's say in China and India, that have capital controls to be able to preserve their wealth and export money out of the country and many other use cases. So ultimately, that's what's supporting the price.
I think I've heard Dr. Brooke talk about this. And, you know, David, you probably know this as well, is that basically in less free areas, Venezuela, China, Mexico, you see, or in illicit areas, you see more adoption of and use of Bitcoin.
Yeah. So if you're in the US and you have your Visa and MasterCard and American Express and you have your Venmo and PayPal, the dollar seems fine. I mean, the dollar is, I think, the best currency in the world. Like, it's the most stable. Like I said before, pretty much in every other country, people prefer to have dollars over their local currency. So it's easy to forget that there's countries like Turkey that have more than 50% inflation every year, and Venezuela or Zimbabwe that have totally destroyed their currency. And so right now they have two options. They can either use dollars or they can use Bitcoin. And most people prefer to use dollars, but Bitcoin is rapidly growing because fundamentally it's better than dollars. It's very hard if you're in Venezuela to keep your dollar safe and to get it to import it into your country. And so the point of Bitcoin is that the fundamentals are superior to fiat money.
Mm-hmm. Now, I began the show by wrongly calling you a crypto powerhouse. You're a Bitcoin guy, clearly. So I'm glad we got to clear that up. I've, you know, in the recent days and or week or so, gotten into NFTs. Now, I've been the biggest skeptic of all. I'm not sure if I'm not a skeptic anymore, but I mean, it's clearly something that people are doing right now. They're selling this form of intellectual property, whether it's Jack Dorsey's first tweet or a slam dunk at the NBA. Eminem, the rapper, sold one of his beats as an NFT, I guess. And the band Avenged Sevenfold, I don't know if they came up with this, but they're famous for doing this collection where there's, like, let's say 10,000 total supply NFTs, and people find out when they buy one which variant they got. Pardon the COVID pun right there. And it has different perks and different value depending on which one they got, like opening a pack of Pokemon cards. And to me, that something about this seems more legitimate than most of what's happening in the economic world out there. So I guess, what's wrong with NFTs? Is it not a form of property rights where people all agree that this particular owner owns this, let's say, this item? Just like if I own the Mona Lisa and someone says, yeah, well, I'll just print my own Mona Lisa. That's kind of what this is like to me when people say, I'll just screenshot the NFT. Like, yeah, but good luck selling that screenshot. It's like I could print the Mona Lisa. No one's going to buy it from me.
Yeah. So this is what I did earlier this year. I worked with a company. So Lil Dicky, the rapper, actually one of his songwriters wanted to sell the rights to the income from his songs. And so I created an NFT where anybody that buys that NFT can now get the future revenue stream from people listening to Lil Dicky. So I worked with the team to build this NFT and we sold it. And so that's perfectly legitimate. Not anybody that owns that NFT, they don't own the song, but they own the royalty revenue from that song. So the other kind of NFTs is just digital art. And now there's this very popular one called the Bored Ape Yacht Club. And it's selling for $400,000 plus. So actually, brands are buying these NFTs of apes, and they're using that as their logo or their avatar on LinkedIn and Twitter. I don't get it personally, but the concept here is that you have intellectual property ownership of this image, and the NFT part just makes it easy to resell on the network without involving any third party.
Well, you know, considering that a picture of a gorilla is going for $400,000, I'd like to take this opportunity to offer up this pinch pot I made in 1984 as an NFT, all the intellectual future royalty rights, movie rights, TV deals. You get the actual pinch pot itself. And as I said, in electronic form, you can pay me in Ether, Tether, gender. I mean, pay me however you want, but here's one idea. And thank you, Christopher, for your contribution in Canadian dollars. Oh my God, who would even touch this Canadian dollars? Timmy asks you, David, isn't there demand for P2P transactions? And that's a utility use for crypto, person-to-person transactions.
Is there demand for it?
I think maybe he was saying, we're questioning what's the use of crypto, and he might be saying, look, it's pay-to-pay, person-to-person transactions, isn't it? Are you seeing a lot of that?
So if you look at the growth, there's a lot of metrics about Bitcoin because it's all public. So you can see the growth of on-chain transactions, where the US dollar equivalent value of on-chain transactions, it's growing steadily. It's very predictable growth. So yes, Bitcoin is very useful for peer-to-peer transactions, but it's also used for e-commerce. It's used for just as a store of wealth. It's used for all kinds of applications today.
And in the chat room, Allison is saying that NFTs are seriously hated in the gaming community. And I mean, look, who are these gamers? What, really educated people with millions of dollars in the bank? I mean, these are maladjusted basement dwellers. And if they don't want the NFTs, they don't need them. What are they going to, can they explain away? Do they have a theory to explain away the fact that people are putting food on the table, moving out of their mom's basement via NFTs? I mean, there's clearly money being made on these. So, I mean, the idea is not to convert, you know, gamers. The idea is people that are already interested in NFTs and looking to invest wisely to make it seem like this NFT has a lot of hype around it. So people invest and then the value is driven up. That's my understanding currently.
You know, I don't really get it, but I'll say this. The deed to your house or the title for your car, that is an NFT. It's a non-fungible token. And right now, that deed is recorded in the courthouse, but it could easily be put in the blockchain one day. So that's to me the real value of NFTs, not these gorillas, but being able to sell my home without paying $60,000 in transfer fees.
Well, I think that's underneath, you know, one of the political, I'm just as an observer, I think one of the political difficulties of Bitcoin hasn't even been adoption, David, but it has been regulation, or the threat of regulation. I mean, so much of what you're talking about, this kind of tokenizing real world content, real world items, you know, the government says, well, you're selling securities and they want to regulate every element of that. So there's like a financial regulatory difficulty here. And, you know, in my two cents for what it's worth is that just like the dot-com boom, I mean, a lot of the companies didn't make it, most didn't, but some tremendous technology was created and a few of the companies, AKA Amazon, eBay, did survive. So that's my fearless prediction. But isn't government big picture here getting in the way of all this information, tokenization, financialization that could be happening?
Yeah, and the US is known as being relatively free market, but actually it's more hostile to crypto projects than pretty much every other country. There's like 90% of projects have special restrictions if you're a US citizen. So yeah, it's a major roadblock to innovation in the space. And if the government keeps it up, we'll just be left behind. It's like the mention of gunpowder. Like, we're in the age of the fiat money of storage and bows and arrows, and somebody mentioned gunpowder. The question is, are we just going to exclude ourselves from that revolution? And what's the consequence of being left behind? So there's a lot of pressure on politicians to not be too hostile to crypto, because it's such a revolution in finance that it's just economically destructive. But I mean, that's the reality that I work with, that in crypto projects, all of them are very cautious about being based in the US or even allowing US citizens to be their customers, or they have special restrictions if you're in the US, especially if you're in the state of New York. They're very, like, a lot of projects just say, we'll take you as customers, except if you're in New York or even California, because they're so hostile to innovation. So yeah, if a country is too hostile to Bitcoin or crypto projects, they're just left behind.
In the super chat, Ram with 40, not sure what that currency is. It looks like,
I think it's rupee.
It's from a country that could really use some Bitcoin right now, I'm guessing. He says, is Peter Schiff right on Bitcoin? Do you know, David, where Peter Schiff is?
So I was reading Peter Schiff in like 2008 and I started buying gold bullion. Like I literally started buying gold bars because I listened to him. And gold since 2008 has like doubled in price. And basically keeping up with inflation. It's almost neutral. Whereas Bitcoin is up like 1,000,000% or something. History is proving Peter Schiff wrong. And Peter Schiff is Bitcoin's number one critic. The community loves to hate on him. His son is, so you want to listen on Bitcoin. It's really amazing. It's epic on Twitter. Peter Schiff's son understands exactly why his dad is wrong. And he will respond to his Bitcoin critique with the perfect analysis. It's really a thing to see. Anyway, yeah, don't listen to Peter Schiff. If you listen to him, you would have bought foreign stocks and gold after the 2008 financial crisis and lost all your money. Focus on Bitcoin.
Well, and you know, it goes without saying, you know, David is an expert in crypto and expert at Bitcoin. He's a member of the Objectivist community. These are not investment recommendations from the Ayn Rand Center UK, from any of us individually. Definitely contact David for more information about that. But, you know, we want to make sure everyone knows that this is for informational purposes only. And, you know, getting to learn about, I think more than anything, rather than the buy, sell, or hold, but what you see is a trend. I mean, David, you gave up your whole kind of career to really focus on this, full time. And this has been your career for the better part of 8 years. So you don't see this as a flash of the pan. Here's the chart of Bitcoin over the last, I think this is what, 8 or 9 years? It's up 15,000%. Where do you see it? Here's your fearless prediction now, time. Let's say 1 year out and maybe 5 years out.
Yeah, it's an extremely volatile asset. So obviously, don't put all your money into Bitcoin. Maybe don't even put most of your money into Bitcoin. But it's very hard to predict because there's so many unknowns. All I would say is that it has very good fundamentals. It has a 12-year track record. And it's averaged for a decade now, 170% per year, basically almost tripling your money every year for a decade. So long term, I'm very bullish about Bitcoin. I think it's a good investment. Short term, you could have a 4-year cycle where it's down 80%. That's possible. So as long as you're emotionally ready for that, I think it's a good bet.
Now, most people, now I've thought like if I could travel back in time and do one thing, I would go to like 2010, invest a bunch of money into Bitcoin. I understand time travel is not available, but what if I go to like one of those time machine websites, you know, timemachine.com, whatever it is, go open up a Bitcoin page or something, invest some money. Would it work retroactively, you think, in your...
Okay, here's what you should do. Go to bitcoinprogressbar.com because people have thought this every year. They think, well, if Bitcoin is $1, I missed the boat. Bitcoin is $10, it's $1,000, I missed the boat. People always think they're too late when it just keeps going growing. So the real question is, when does it stop growing? Because obviously it can't be worth more than all the wealth in the universe. It has to slow down at some point. It must. So bitcoinprogressbar.com will show you Bitcoin relative to other stores of value. So for example, all the gold in the world is worth $11 or $12 trillion. Bitcoin is worth $1 trillion. So if Bitcoin replaces gold as a store of value, and remember that gold has been flat for the last decade, Bitcoin goes up in price 10 or 12x. If Bitcoin replaces the dollar as a store of value, again, bitcoinprogressbar.com has the exact numbers, it goes up 100x, etc. It replaces all currencies, not saying it will, just a way to think about it. My point is, I think we're early. And so don't think that you missed the boat because there's still a long way to go.
Well, that's quite a statement right there. It's still early, still a good time in the scope of things to get into Bitcoin. All right. I'm going to think about that personally, especially with some of this money, you know, I'm getting that I'm sort of stumbling into now. My work partner, the Indian King, they call him in the crypto world. The Indian King, just he asked me, like, Are you advertising the NFT right now? Where are all these sales coming from? This is amazing. Anyway, I just want to mention, because people in the chat room were excited by that rant I did about gamers and the NFTs. We're actually going to turn that rant into an NFT that you can all. This one's going to be a bidding war. Oh, ooh, you're going to really want.
You tell me that.
Rocco, I can do it for you. If you want me to create and make an NFT, I can do it. No problem.
Okay, cool.
I'll do it for free.
That material is getting this kind of interest in my pinch pot. Not one bit. I do not understand this new.
Well,
world.
You're making fun of it, but at the same. But I know if you were actually listed, you might be surprised at what happens.
DM me someone. Thank you, Dan. Now David's website is thebitcoinconsultancy.com.
Yes.
And where should people follow you in social as well? Let's get that out.
On Twitter, Heroic Life. That's my Twitter handle, Heroic Life.
Heroic Life. Very cool. Guys, my goal for 2022 is for all three of us to become like that. Who's the screaming guy who's always giving you advice?
Grandpa Simpson?
Yes. No, the guy, he's like a successful businessman and he's always yelling and like, here's what you need.
The guy from Network, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Does someone know who I'm talking about in the chat? Maybe like the guy, he gives advice and he's supposed to be this really successful businessman. he's viral all over the place. I forget his name, but someone's got to know who I'm referring to here. One of these motivational guys.
Oh.
Not Dave Ramsey, no.
No, it's the one that looks like he's all roided up, but Tony Robbins.
No. No one knows who that guy is, like what he's done. Well,
first of all, Mary Lean is, thank you for your contribution. She's telling you to check your therapist. Inner Reese is giving us Moss Canadian dollars. Thank you for that. Oh, Jim Cramer.
No, not Jim Cramer. I'm talking about the real deal. Who is this guy? He's like Romanian or something. He's from like one of these former block. I don't know where he's from. Not Dan Pina. We're almost there. We're narrowing it down. The guy, he's very popular on social media, giving like a day in the life of him. He gives you advice. He'll talk to like people who call in. They say, I want to be successful. And he'll be like, well, just by the fact that you said that, I know 100% you won't be successful, because what you need to be doing right now is not talking, doing this. No, not Jim Cramer. All right. I guess we'll never know who it is. If anyone figures out who I'm talking about, it's, leave us a comment down below. I can't believe nobody's figured out who I'm thinking of right now, but this is radio death. Go on, Jonathan.
Well, first of all, thank you, David. I encourage everyone to, let's continue this conversation. We definitely want to have you back again. And, you know, regardless of where Bitcoin goes, you know, there's no predictions being made. People are always going to do their own. Andrew Tate, is that
no,
it?
Not the guy, not Andrew Tate, the guy with the whole theory of why women should clean. No, that not that guy. Jonathan Honig is another guest. No.
Well, you know, it makes me think of Rand at some point. I think it was maybe in her speech at someone said to her, she referenced the Reverend Ike. And someone said, what's the best way to help the poor? And she said, the best way to help the poor is not to be one of them.
That's exactly right.
That's the Reverend I'm quoting in a sense. So David's hopefully helping us to do that. We appreciate your time.
That's exactly right. Thank you. I'm going to ask that we extend the show for just about 10, 15 seconds as I look at, as I figure out who this guy was. Who I'm thinking of? Gary V. Gary effing is who I was thinking of. Yeah,
he's great.
Yes, and my goal is for all of us to be that guy. Like a year from now, all of us are yelling at people. If that's your attitude, you're never going to be successful, and basically be famous for being rich, and no one really knows where we came from. That should be all of us. But anyway, we all have our goals.
Google Susan Powder fight the insanity. It was the same thing in. About 35 years ago, but we'll look up Gary as well. We'll look up David, and we'll see you all when 6 months from now.
What, no. David, 6 months from now? What are you asking?
What's next for the channel and what for us?
Oh, so nothing else today, guys. It's holiday season. Nothing else today. Thank you so much for your support of the network and for watching today. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time, for the Daily Objective. It's getting close to the end of the year, folks. We got some exciting content for you. Thank you all so much for being here and for supporting your favorite NFTs. Thank you very much, David. This has been very informative. I'm going to be rewatching this. Awesome. Anytime. Cool. We need you here actually tomorrow, same time, for more financial insight. I'm just kidding. But thank you. And I'm going to be rewatching this episode and like learning what it all means at my pace. See you guys on Clubhouse for a little while. Oh, no Clubhouse, says Jonathan. Okay, no Clubhouse. See you guys back here tomorrow, and...